ज्ञानञ्जन शलाकय चाक्षुरुन् मिलितम् येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। हे लोदुनितके दया विषदया प्राण्मेलदामोदया साम्यक्षस्रविवादया रसदया चितार्पितोन्मादया शाश्वतभक्तिविनोदया सुमदया मधुरमर्यादया श्रीचैतन्यनिधे दया तव दया भूयादमन्दोदया। दिव्यवृन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमद श्रीमातरत्नगार सिंहासनस्थं श्रीमान् राधाश्रीलगोविन्ददेवपृष्ठालिभीष्टव्यमनुस्मरामि। भक्तिविहीनायपराधलक्षये क्षिप्तश्चाकमादितरङ्गमाद्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्देन्मस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। वृन्देन्मस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। स्वस्तिरस्तु विश्वासकलो प्रसीदतम् ध्यायन्तु भूतानि शिवन्मितो धिय मनश्च भाद्रं भजतादधुक्षये अवेशतं नुमतिरपि यहैतुकी। Good evening to all of you from Shampriya Kunj in Swiss Alps, having a very beautiful darshan. Well, having a beautiful darshan while looking at you, but slightly looking to my right and having another beautiful darshan of the monumental Alps and astonishing beauty of nature in this particular spot, not only here, of course, but yeah, a very thick reminder of the sacredness of everything. Now, then you leave the Alps and enter into the jungle of concrete, and you need to carry that reminder with you. So that's the challenge waiting for me in a few days, and pray to be successful in my interaction with matter in all of its forms and dispositions. So we're happy to be with all of you. We are warming up for a great, beautiful celebration of Sri Radhastami tomorrow. So I welcome each one of you, trusting you're welcoming me as well. And as we welcome each other, we invite whoever has a question to bring your offering to the table. And again, it can be a question, it can be a quest. It is a quest, it is an exploration, it's a sharing. So it's a pretty lakshanam in Rupa Goswami's words, right? Symptoms of love, you will say. Six symptoms of love. And there are only three in terms of giving and receiving gifts, giving and receiving prasad, which could mean grace as well, right? Ultimately feeding each other with grace and revealing our hearts, which is another form of feeding each other with grace. At the end of the day, that's what satsanga, this satsang, weekly satsang is to be boiled down to, a mutual feeding, graceful feeding, reciprocal graceful feeding. So Anutam Chitra has the hands raised first, so let's see what's the preparation she's bringing to feed us with today. We are all longing to be nourished.
Yeah, I'm also seeking to be nourished because It's Radhashtami tomorrow here, and I was thinking I would probably ask what are certain reflections or things to meditate on or prompts to meditate on the occasion of Radhashtami. That was like, of course, it may seem vague. Or the answer for that question is vast, but still.
What? The audio is not so clear. So what did you say at the end?
Yeah, I said that
At the very end, at the very end.
the answer for. Sorry, Maharaj, am I audible?
You say at the very end, the rest I could hear.
Yeah. I said the answer could be really big, but then still anything, any prompts or ideas in whatever time possible would be appreciated.
Yeah, well, first thing that comes to mind will be one of a phrase that is becoming more and more a favorite of mine, which is, it depends. Those two words are very important for all of us because it's a call for honoring the specificity of each one's journey, right? So how to honor Radhastami. It depends. Right? It depends what each one, where each one of us is, and how we need to approach the reality of Sri Radha. So, I'm not so much a fan of universal prompts, so to say, right? In other words, okay, here comes the prompt, and it's of universal application for everyone, and it has to work in the same way for every person, and of course, at the same time, we all sing the same chant, the same mantra in one way, but at the same time, there is a do so many things, so many of the same things, each of us, different people, but still there is a specificity of that. So, of course, I can share some thoughts. But again, acknowledging that for each of us, Sri Radha and the connection with the principle of the personality of Sri Radha is unique. Right? It's radically personal. So, where to begin? I was not expecting a question. I was maybe thinking someone may ask something about Lalita Devi, since today also there is some celebration out here on her appearance day, but I was taken by surprise by your question on Sri Radha, which is great. I mean, it's okay, as we were talking some weeks ago in Ananda Dham for when we were celebrating Sri Radhastami, and we were, Krishna Chandra Prabhu brought the idea of Adi Bhas Thithi, right? These talks that are given one day before the actual celebration, generally one day before, but actually how we can be engaged in that more than one day before and continuing the reflecting after that, overflowing into 4 months, and then comes again another month of anticipation, and again the day, official day, and then the overflow after that. So personally, I feel that it's important that whenever we speak about Radhastami, Janmashtami, Gopurnim, whatever celebration we are sharing, trying to honor, we keep the discussion relatable to our journey. Not to make it self-centering me. Now it's like everything has to revolve around where I am, right? But at the same time, yeah, we have to be careful that we speak in ways that are relevant for us. Not, again, not invoking self-centeredness, but also not invoking just speaking professionally for the sake of saying something on the occasion. It doesn't change anything inside of me. And it's so easy to fall into that and to learn the proper things to say on an occasion like Radhastami or any other occasion, like to craft, carefully craft script with all the right beliefs and all the right things to say. But sometimes the concern about that is mostly, hopefully nobody finds fault in me or whatever, right? I passed the test, right? I'm a good boy. Woo! It's more like something that I try to do it as better as I can, so I get rid of that as soon as I can. Okay, I did the correct things. Okay, whew, done. Now I can rest. So we don't want to speak about Sri Radha from that place, right? As something that I will try to do it as perfectly as possible, so I get rid of having to speak about that as soon as possible, as if it will be a burden to glorify her. So where to start? Again, for me, it's very, very important, the principle of Sri Radha. And again, it's not only a principle. At the end, behind every principle, there is a person. And I think that, of course, from a healthy place and from a realistic place, we, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava community, we should get more and more, feel more at home speaking about the goddess. Sometimes, of course, our movement is known as Krishna consciousness. That's an expression that actually Srila Prabhupada used mostly. And I have nothing against that, of course. There's so much to draw from those two words. But also we have to be careful in expressing ourselves in those terms, giving, how to say, too much emphasis to Krishna to the point that we have lost sight of who Radha is. Because the moment you lose sight of who Radha is, you start to misread who Krishna is. You follow my point? I mean, you cannot speak about Krishna without Radha. I mean, so if we overemphasize Krishna to the point that there's nothing to be said about Radha, we should also question what we are saying about Krishna. Which Krishna is that one? Where Radha is not there, right? Of course, for many reasons that to me are very clear and obvious, personalities like Srila Prabhupada chose to, felt inclined to speak more about Krishna, I will say arguably because of his inner affinity in Sakya Bhav to Krishna. I personally, in my own journey, have had and has the fortune of, as I always say many times, of getting to know Srila Prabhupada and Srila Sridhar Maharaj basically at the same time. So Srila Sridhar Maharaj was someone who will speak about Krishna, of course, who can have something against speaking about the all attractive. But I will say, and many have said that, and he himself said that his main emphasis will be on Sri Radha and Sriman Mahaprabhu. So if you are accustomed to listening to his lectures or reading his books, he will go more in those two directions, which how much you can separate between this again. So for me, that's a beautiful compliment. It's perfectly complementary. I'm not seeing here any problem, so to say, any conflict. So Sri Radha is a crucial element in our tradition. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say, there are those who are called Shaktas, who worship Devi, Kali, Durga, personification of material nature, looking for very specific personal, quote unquote, we will say blessings for them from the goddess. But still is very utilitarian, right? So they are called Shaktas, and Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say, we are Shuddha Shaktas. We worship the goddess, the Shakti, with the pure, ideally with the ideal, with the pure intention. We don't approach the goddess for our own sake, but for the sake of love's necessity. The goddess is the personification of love. Sri Radha is the embodiment, Mahabhav Swarupini. She's the embodiment of love and dedication, to the utmost degree, to a degree that for some of us it may even seem at times dysfunctional and codependent. when looked from a very superficial eye. No? Like, I don't know, you go to the last verse of Shikshastakam, which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, that was spoken by Sri Radha, though Mahaprabhu voiced the verse, but the idea is he pronounced it in fully embedded into Radha Bhava. And there he, she, he's saying, Krishna can do whatever he wants with me. He can embrace me, he can kick me, he can trample on me. No matter what he does, he will be forever the Lord of my life. So again, for some of us on this side of the equation, we will think, wow, you don't want to approach a boyfriend like that, right? You want to approach a partnership from that place. That won't end good. So is this the same? So we may need, that's why that's the last verse of Shikshastakam. First, you need to integrate the first seven and all their implications so you can reach there safe and read that for what that actually is, which is a very natural, organic, voluntary, ongoing choice of Sri Radha to dedicate herself in the most possible loving way to satisfy the needs of her beloved. And she knows there are so many needs in the heart of her beloved, in the context of love, again. So all this happens in the context of fullness. Krishna has needs in the context of fullness. Radha has needs because she's fully identified with Krishna's needs. So whatever needs he has, she has. But her dedication to him comes from a place of fullness also. She's not codependent. She's not approaching Krishna because she has some psycho-emotional existential hole and which has exact shape of Krishna. So he you superimposition there. Okay, now you feel my hole. I love you. Not like many times we approach people in this world. We say I love you, but we actually want them to fill in the existential void that we have not been able to fill in ourselves, so to say. But here we are talking about Radha and Krishna, the absolute Brahman, if we want to use that word, Upanishadic term, which means that entity which expands and makes others expand. So that by the very nature of expansive nature of the absolute, there is a tendency to celebrate, to grow. So the absolute becomes two, not in time. It's an eternal event, those scriptures may say sometime, Eko Bahusham, the one became many. No? The one was dissatisfied with being one, was bored, so to say, and expanded into many to celebrate. But again, this is not an event in time. I won't speak so nicely about that absolute one in the very beginning, right? Oh, he was boring, so he needed something else not to be so bored. So then, okay, then Radha and Krishna appeared. It's not like that. Radha and Krishna are eternal truths, but, and this is a very paradoxical idea that we need to gradually integrate. Radha and Krishna are both the divine, right? Many times you have to pay attention to your inner, how you think of the things inside of you. Do you think of Krishna as God only and Radha as some supportive role in the drama or as a devotee only? How do we think about Krishna? How do we think about Mahaprabhu? I mean, not to feel bad about ourselves, just to have the courage to question our own inner processes. So to make sure we are accurate in how we are approaching the relationship, because Chaitanya Charitamrita Prema Sampu, different scriptures say Radha and Krishna are one soul in two bodies. Different ways of putting it. Again, different words are difficult. No, the same absolute appearing as God and Goddess. No, it's difficult. In our mind, we tend to compartmentalize things. So God goes in this box. Now comes this other box. Oh, you're speaking about Goddess now. So what to do with that? Right? Or even, I don't know, in the Christian Trinity, you have three people, but they are one. And we may say, yes, of course. But how we are internalizing that unity and diversity, you know, it has to become a mature realization. So again, as we may speak about Krishna as God, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, we have the same right and duty to speak about Radha as Goddess, the Supreme Personality of the Goddess, Bhagavati. And each of them are necessary to keep the equation in balance. No, too much emphasis only in one spoils the math, so to say. So Shirada is especially worshipped in the Gaudiya tradition and in other Vaishnava sampradayas as well, for sure. I mean, we should be also careful not to claim exclusivity and we are the ones who worship Radharani more than any other Vaishnava group, because that's not true. I mean, if you pay attention to some other Vaishnava sampradayas, Hip Haribans, Vallabh Sampradaya, etc., they have very intense, strong emphasis from a different perspective, but in the figure of Radha. So again, Radhastami represents the appearance of Radha on earth, no? As Janmastami represents the appearance of Krishna on earth. And there are stories about that, and we can tell them and we can share them, and they're beautiful. But I personally always feel more interested, and it's my personal interest, you don't need to agree with me, in relating to what this person that we are celebrating tomorrow, but today in advance, and always, hopefully every day, represents to me. You know, how her life, what she embodies, what she lives for, how that reverberates in my own being, how her level of dedication, how familiar I am with that to begin with, right? Yeah. Bhadra says, for them in New Zealand, today is Radhastami. You're right, you live in the future over there. Happy Radhastami to all the Kiwis present here. Kiwis are a name for people in New Zealand, just in case. So, happy Radhastami over there. And since I won't be giving any English Radhastami sharing tomorrow, we'll be doing in Spanish tomorrow. A few words today, why not? So yeah, Radha is the goddess, Radha is the personification of divine love. Radha is the ultimate example of absolute identification with the needs of love. Again, love is constantly creating new necessities, and we are invited to tend to those necessities, as we were talking the other day. That's a nice way of thinking of ourselves. I'm aspiring to tend the ongoing necessities of love. That's my dharma. At least that's what I want to be my dharma. I have no other business. I don't want to have any other business. I still have a few separate clandestine businesses, but I don't want to have any other business in this life as an ideal that to tend in the most sensitive, empathic, present ways to the ongoing necessities of love. So again, Sri Radha is a personification of that. Whenever we zoom in a little bit into the Leelas, the description of her loving interaction with Krishna, into the details of the Goswami's explanations to some of the songs, like the Gopi Gita, I remember some years ago we did a whole series on the different Gopi Gitas of the Bhagavatam, right? The Venu Gita, Pranaya Gita, Gopi Gita, Biraha Gita, Brahmara Gita, different Gitas, different songs in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam where the gopis are. And Sri Radha being the zenith of that, expressing their loving dedication, expressing how identified they are with the actual definition of bhakti, which is offering pleasurable, favorable service to the object of our affection. So that's a very special, as we will talk many times, of course. Gaudiya Sampradaya is a very broad school. There is place for everyone. Not everyone in this tradition is will be necessarily inclined to what we call Radha Dasyam, of the service of Sri Radha personally, and it's okay. We should be very careful not to draw unnecessary hierarchies there and say, no, That's the highest, and everything is the low is lower than that. You do not belong fully. You are not getting it properly. Now, this is what the Gaudiya Sampradaya is about, or whomever, no? So many ideas. This is what Tathagatamya Sangha is about. This is what that group is about. You ultimately pointing to that. Let's be careful about dealing with all these truths in a humble, mature way, no? And if for whatever reason someone happens to have a different affinity and it's a genuine one, that's to be honored. No, I mean, if it's genuine, whatever is genuine is to be honored, basically. But of course, yes, Gaudiya Sampradaya, Mahaprabhu's inner experience, the whole Gaur Lila in big part is about him tasting Radha Bhav, though in the life of Mahaprabhu, he will express so many moods, right? He will. These days, I was reading some verses from both Chaitanya Bhagavat and one book called Krishna Chaitanya Charit, the first biography of Mahaprabhu by Murari Gupta. And in this verse, it's described Mahaprabhu at times feels like a gopa, like a cowherd boy. Sometimes he exhibits the bhav, I'm God, Aishwarya. So, okay, sometimes he was Nisrimha Dev, Balaram, Baraha Dev. He goes to all this multiplicity of identities. But at the same time, we could say we could make the point in his other forms, he already experiences that. He experiences Baraha Bhav for a moment, but he already appeared as Baraha. He shows us Narasimha Dev, but he already appeared as Narasimha Dev. But there is one particular experience that he's not experiencing anywhere else outside of Gaur Lila, and that's the main reason why Gaur Lila is there, which is him experiencing Radha Bhav. And of course, that becomes a natural. His experience becomes a natural outpouring and consequence of what the Sampradaya has to offer. And of course, we could speak about Sri Radha in so many deep, esoteric ways, rasa-laden explanations, quoting specific lilas and verses, and entering into the minutiae, into the details of her emotional disposition. And I don't know, Rupa Goswami has done so uniquely in books like Ujjval Nilamani, where he in detail analyzed the psychology, ecstatic psychology of Sri Radha and the co simultaneous coexistence of a whole array of emotions that for most of us on this world, many of them, we do not even experience them, yeah? Because as we know, for most human beings, we have a pretty flat, shallow emotional life, with all respect, as Brené Brown will explain in the Atlas of the Heart, where she tries to give like 85 words for emotions, but say that most humans only have 4 or 5 words to describe their emotions. And generally, they won't be experiencing all of them simultaneously either. So, and on the contrary, we have here Sri Radha experiencing like 15 emotions at the same time, which seem for us to be absolutely contradictory to one another. But in her, all that is coexisting and nourishing each other and creating a unique combination and flavor that, of course, she offers that for the pleasure of Krishna. And she's a fanatic of Krishna's pleasure, we can put it that way, right? She's obsessed with seeing her beloved finding happiness, like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will explain in his explanation of the last verse of Shikshastakam, I'm paraphrasing Sri Radha, saying, if I get to know that Krishna's happiness will increase by him being with other women, I won't doubt for a minute in going to the house of that lady, becoming a maid servant of hers, and making all the necessary arrangements for her to meet with Krishna. Krishna's happiness is the goal of my life. That's how she puts it. Now, that's a very noble idea, very beautiful idea. Very high ideal at the same time, right? But at the same time, yeah, that's in one sense a big emphasis in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. We want to become servants of that ideal, or of that personality, or of those personalities who somehow feel like that. And of course, we don't want to limit Radha to that. Like, for example, today is in celebration of Lalita Saptami. Though, to be honest, the date is wrong, and it has been wrong in the Vaishnav calendar for centuries, and it's okay, because if you read Rupa Goswami's Radha Krishna Ganodesha Deepika, It is described that Lalita Devi is born 27 days before Sri Radha. So we are celebrating now one day before. So someone said, well, but pure devotees have been celebrating that on the wrong day for many decades. That means they can be wrong on something. Yes, okay, no problem. I mean, the celebration is ongoing. So we can celebrate it today as well, 27 days before tomorrow. Doesn't matter in one point. But for a minute, touching upon Lalita Sakhi, it's a similar principle, of course. And she will be seen as an expansion of Sri Radha, but whatever she does, and so, at sometimes the way she behaves in connection to Radha and Krishna, it really feels like she's getting in the way. Like she's playing hard, she's bullying Krishna, she's criticizing Radha, she's telling them what to do, what not to do. Again, from a very uninformed glance, we will think, how this lady dares to behave in that way. But if you explore that more in detail, you realize, oh, her role is absolutely crucial, and she's the acharya of creative tension in the Leela. And she has, everyone needs someone like her to create, to play it hard, and that turns the heart further, increases the longing, increases the joy of reunion. And she knows when to push and play hard, and she knows when to break that pattern as well, right at the exact place to create the specific height of love that is required. So similarly, Sri Radha, again, sometimes she will perform man, she will become manini, she will enter into a peak. You say in English, peak, loving peak, like loving anger, jealousy, whatever. And she won't be willing to see Krishna and all this. But all that is to give him love. Again, love moves in a crooked way. Don't forget this part, right? It's similar to when the gopis ask Krishna, why you left the rasa, the Leela? And he said, because I love you. And we could be like, what? No, because we have our very, again, shallow emotional mind. If you love someone, you will never dare to disappear. You have to be there all the time. And you know that that's not true. In order to preserve your relationship with your husband, you may need to send each other away for a few days. Of course, that's another example. No, it's not from the same place. But my point is union and separation. Separation has a role in the further reunion. So Krishna tells that to the gopis. I've disappeared from the rasa lila, from the rasa dance, because I love you, because I want the best for you, and the best for you is to increase your love for me. And I knew that the best way for your love for me to increase was in separation. And now we are together again, and we will reach new heights of loving experience. So now it made sense. So similarly, Sri Radha sometimes will behave externally in ways that, according to our standards of how love should look like, may seem contradictory or unloving. But again, this invites us to actually discover what's the ultimate nature of love. And love is so much identified with the necessity of the moment. What's the necessity of the moment for love to reach a new height? So that's for me a very practical way to worship Sri Radha, trying to bring it back to our daily lives and relationships, and not just keep this elitistic, theoretical, super esoteric narrative that then is very poorly represented in the day to day. So Radha is the personification of love, okay, of loving Krishna, okay, how we relate to each other. Perceiving the divine presence in everyone and everyone else, including ourselves, and how to start identifying with the necessity of the moment. In any given situation of my day, what's love asking me of? What's the love's invitation in this particular situation? How to give myself in the most fulfilling possible way, unrealistic and sustainable in this particular moment, you know? To bear in mind that at every moment, love is sending us a new invitation, a new love letter is being sent to our mailbox every second, basically, a new invitation to upgrade our disposition. And again, this is not limited to loving Radha, loving Krishna, loving Guru, loving Vaishnava, but loving everything. Remember, the goal of life is to love Radha and Krishna and whatever exists in relationship to them, which is everything. So the goal of life is to love everything. So that's a few words that I will share. I'm seeing like three, four more hands raised, and of course we could continue talking about Sri Radha. And if you have questions or something in relation to her today, it's totally fine. You can bring them. But some initial thoughts, trying to bring it from the Lila, Tattva, Goddess, Bhakti, dedication perspective to the relational level on the day-to-day basis, and how to honor the principle of Radhastami, the principle of the appearance of the embodiment of love. Okay, how can I invoke the appearance of the embodiment of love in any given moment? That's the ongoing question that any loyal servant of Radha has in their mind, right? How to align myself with love's call at any given moment? It's always a new invitation. It's always a new level of dedicating myself. That's how Sri Radha lives her life, basically, always open to further disclosure, always open to a new discovery of how can I please Krishna today? How can I love him? How can I give myself? And this is the unique paradox, of course. And Srila Siddha Maharaj points to that, and I mentioned that in my book regarding, again, going back to the insatiable thirst of love, that Sri Radha, if there is one pain that Sri Radha experiences, Srila Siddha Maharaj puts this in his own words, it's not so much the pain of sometimes Krishna not appearing for the rendezvous or the pain of separation of him. Of course, those things are, it's not that they are not painful, but the emphasis here is the pain that she most acutely feels is, I have not been able to fully give myself to Krishna yet. Which again, from our perspective, could seem like, oh, that sounds dysfunctional. No, rather, don't feel like that. You're the embodiment of that. You don't feel it. Like, but we won't be able to convince her to the contrary, because that's a genuine experience she's having. I have not been able so far to give myself to Krishna. And when, of course, you study the details of Radha's dedication, I mean, if there's one person, if we have to pick one person who gives herself fully to Krishna, that's her. But paradoxically, she feels, I've not been able to do that yet. Which, because again, that's the nature of love. You can always give yourself more and more. So, how to deal with those dynamics? For us, we are not Radha, right? So, but at the same time, that's a horizon to which we are invited to enter into. So, how to gradually enter into that realm in a way that is sustainable and healthy, challenging enough, realistic, not neurotic, but again, inviting, inspiring, exciting. Those things, all the things, and we become more and more able to accommodate the broader array of emotional disposition to offer to Krishna. Because at the end of the day, and to offer to Radha, and to offer to everyone, at the end of the day, that's the offering, right? The offering is our heart. It's all the unique nuance that starts to boil in your heart, so to say. Externally, it may take so many forms or not so many forms, but the more elaborate ornamentation in the offering happens inside the heart, the more we advance. That's why we hear some of our Goswamis, how Raghunath Das Goswami, how Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami worship Govardhan. Just a tulsi leaf and a little water. That's it. And he's like, that's it. That's too easy on the outside. Yes, of course, because he's personifying Prayojan, the goal of life. So he's the embodiment of the goal of life, which means there's so much elaborate offering inside going on. So you keep it externally as simple as possible. So internally, you are making all the elaboration, all the nuance, all the offering of bhava. At the end, the offering is bhava, bhava seva. You're offering emotions to Krishna, to Radha, to the divine. You're offering your heart. So that's why Jiva Goswami will say sadhana bhakti is a preliminary stage to actual bhakti. Not to make any one of you who probably are, have not arrived to bhakti, not to make any one of you to feel bad about it. Just to make an important point. Sadhana bhakti is assembling all the elements and putting them together and properly integrating all these layers and complexities, so we can finally give a very wholly elaborate heart for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. And when you reach to that point, and we have seen that in the life of so many great souls, many of them externally do nothing basically, because everything is happening on the inside. Or in some cases, they do a lot on the outside, but that happens as an outpouring of the inside. So you have the different varieties, but still the main thing is going on in the on the inside. So we have to pay close attention there, in their case and in our case. How my practice, the way I live my life, is taking me to a more and more elaborate offering of my emotional disposition. How can I make a bouquet of my emotions for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna? So I like to give the contrast with the bonsai version. No? Sometimes, unfortunately, even in the name of religion, we make a bonsai of ourselves. We not only we prune ourselves to grow stronger, but we really bonsai ourselves as a verb, cut off. So we want to create a bouquet, a very ornamented, elaborate, beautiful, and each flower will be a different emotion, and all of them will be coexisting in a very coherent and tasteful way. And that will be the offering for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. That's the world we want to enter. We want to enter a planet made of emotions. That's Srila Mar's description. In spiritual world, the land is made of bhava. It's not, the land is not made of land. It looks like land, like soil, but it's made of a particular emotional disposition. That's with the tree, that's with the cows, that with your spiritual body that will acquire. That's not made of the elements we see here. They're made of particular emotional dispositions. So, of course, to enter such a world and to burn such intensity, we need to gradually warm up. So that's sadhana bhakti. It's warming up for life of bhava bhakti and prem bhakti, which is bhakti proper with capital letters. No? But again, not to make it the goal attaining thing. It's ongoing, as we say. The more you attain all these higher stages, the more you feel there is to offer. Because the more you contact the potential of your own heart and you really see how much you can give yourself. You, in conjunction with the influence of Swarup Shakti, Bhakti, love, that combination is dangerous. You can become a force of nature. You can do so much, well, here and there and everywhere. So let's not underestimate our potential. Anyhow, I thought I was done like for 20 minutes ago, but it's not. It was not the case. That's what it happens. So I hope that helps, Madam Chitra. I already went like almost for an hour. So,
Thank you so much, Maharaj. That was very helpful. And I am in awe and wonder of so many things that you shared, and I'm going to sit with that. Thank you, Maharaj.
my pleasure. Let's invite each other to share hearts from a different perspective, Zoom breakthrough rooms. Let's continue celebrating Radhastami. Let's join our brothers and sisters in New Zealand who are already officially on the day of Radhastami. So let's get into it, all of us. Bhakti Rasa will invite us for a few minutes to the breakthrough rooms, breakout breakthrough rooms. Let's share with each other what's Sri Radha for us, how we feel we can relate to that beautiful reality and personality today in the best possible way. Well, we had a nourishing sharing of hearts in the context of exploring the possibilities of love. Very exciting prospect for sure. Let's continue with the hands, the raised hands in the order they were originally shared, which is the one I'm seeing now exactly, I think. So let's continue with Sherry, then Kanupriya, then Katie. Hopefully we have time for all of you. I extended a little bit with the first one. So Sherry, please.
Hi
Welcome.
Krishna. Hi Krishna Maharaj. Hi Krishna, everybody. My question's going to be short, and I imagine you'll have it won't take you long to answer. And it definitely ties in with Anutam's question to you, because I had a question about Radha as well. And I think you pretty much answered it for me through what you were speaking before. Also, I have to say, the last image you left us with making a bouquet of emotions for Radha and Krishna was so powerful for me, and I thank you for that. It really made my heart sort of swell. So my original question was going to be, I had read somewhere that Krishna should only be approached through Radha. And I realize, that we do that when we chant the mantra. We're also invoking Radha as well as Krishna. But my question, I think I need to whittle down, is prayer and how we're accessing Radha and Krishna. When I was growing up a Christian, I was taught to pray to Jesus, aka God. and I love that description of the Trinity too. Father, Son, Holy Spirit is very similar in some ways to some of the things we discuss. But so I would directly pray to God. And what prayer started to look like to me when I was a child were the memorized prayers, the Our Father, the Hail Marys, and that was my approach. But then it turned into, and maybe this was because I was an only child with no friends, I don't know. I just started talking to God all the time. I mean, God was just like my buddy. I would wake up and, like sort of this constant companion that was with me, right? So ever since I was a child, that became, a way for me to approach God, to pray, to talk to the eternal, the sweet absolute. And I remember my mother telling me at some point, even in that time, that, if you really want to get special favor from God, go to Mother Mary, go to Jesus's mom, because she intercedes, and your prayer will like bump up in line. And so I remember trying to do that, and I just kind of always felt like, yeah, but I'm already talking to God, so I don't really need to go through her. And so when I became, more involved in Krishna consciousness, it was very, very Krishna centric for me. But I always obviously had a love of Radha when I would read about Radha or, hear the Leela. I guess my question kind of boils down to, yes, chanting with intention, but is just talking to them okay? I mean, is that like too simplistic? I mean, I know we have rituals and those are important. I know we have certain ways of doing things. Am I too casual in my approach? And originally I was thinking, okay, well, if I'm not approaching Radha first, does Krishna even hear me? And now I'm really coming to the understanding. I'm really seeing it. They're one. They're one. They're one. So if I'm talking to Krishna, Radha's hearing. If I'm talking to Radha, Krishna's hearing. Is this oversimplistic of me? I mean, like, I guess I'm just, that would be my question. Am I oversimplifying it?
Thank you. Of course, you are asking the question for yourself, so I made sure something that hopefully is applicable to your own self, because again, it depends. Depending where we are on the journey, our approach and way of communicating or connecting Radha and Krishna may be different, right? Not only on our stage of the journey, but on who we are as individuals, but also there are degrees of getting to know more in detail who are Radha and Krishna, basically. In the beginning, it may be more like a concept, or eventually it's not a concept, it's a person, but there are some filtering of the person through certain ideas we may have. And it's, again, I'm not condemning any of that. I'm just saying that in time, the relationship becomes more and more specific and accurate. No, like I don't know. Again, an example, not to give make a full parallel, but we know someone in this world, and we kind of feel I fell in love, but actually you don't know the person. Generally, then you come to know the person, and then you have the actual chance of choosing to love that person. With including all the stuff that you come to know after the honeymoon period, right? So my point is, it takes time to get, and the more you know the person, the more you can love the person for who the person actually is. You follow my point? So on some level, something similar applies to God. In the beginning, we may have a more hazy idea of who God is, and there will be a type of love corresponding to that haziness. And eventually we get to know the person more, and we have the chance of choosing to love that person all the more because of that specific of who that person is more specifically and more specifically and more spe so I will say that's also the role of knowledge, if you want to use that term, in terms of getting to know about Radha and listening and hearing about her or Radha and Krishna Mahaprabhu. It's not just getting info. But getting a glimpse of the person by very living descriptions of experienced people, and then really choosing to fall in love with who that person actually is and not with my ideas about the person, which sometimes can happen. Let's be honest, we have to be very discerning about, okay, who is Radha and Krishna? Which are my ideas about Radha and Krishna? How much one thing matches the other or not. So, and again, there are degrees of approach. Like Krishna says in the Gita, in the beginning, people approach me for money, for relief of suffering, for knowledge. And it's okay. I welcome them all. But at one point, someone approached me for who I am, not for what I have to give to them. Right? So regarding the example you were mentioning about Mary, and I can see that, like, okay, if you want to get the special blessing, but sometimes in that prayer, and again, for a child it's totally fine, but what's the blessing we are looking for? Right? It's something that ends up in me, or it's a blessing to offer myself, as we explained before, for the pleasure of the beloved. And again, I'm not condemning one or the other, but there is a clear difference there. And Krishna says, okay, we can begin anywhere. Wherever you are, begin there. If you are full of desires and you see everything self-centered and I'm in your service, I'm in your service, no problem. But ideally, the relationship should mature beyond seeing the other person just to serve me, right? So when we hear in our tradition, you only approach Krishna through Radha, it's not so much like a formula that if you miss Radha, Krishna won't hear you on all this type of like of formulaic mechanistic things. Okay, I have to say Radha first, Hari. Okay, now I caught Krishna's attention by force because I say the correct word. It's not like that. But the idea is, again, approach Krishna through Radha. Who is Radha? We just share some thoughts about that. What does she stand for? What does she embody, represent? A loving attitude of selfless dedication for the pleasure of the sweet absolute. So approach Krishna through Radha means ideally, whenever you address Krishna, is through the spirit of Radha, in the sense of through the spirit of giving yourself in loving service, even if you don't use the word Radha or something like that, right? So this will be as practical as I can, this notion of, I mean, address Krishna through Radha. And of course, again, the more the whole thing develops, at one point you may be approaching Krishna to serve Radha. And again, serving Radha and serving Krishna, they are not separate departments, right? They are not in competition with one another. At the end of the day, our Ishtadevi in one sense is not Sri Radha separate from Krishna. No, Radha Krishna Pranamore Jugala Kishore, says Narottam Das Thakur. No, Pranamo, the life of my life are Radha and Krishna Jugala Kishore, the divine couple. No? So Narottam Das Thakur is a Manjari. He's very much in the service of Radha, but being in the service of Radha means being in the service of Krishna because Radha wants to be with Krishna, so and Krishna wants to be with Radha. So, at the end of the day, we kind of like make this like dualistic separation. No, I only care for Radha. I don't care for Krishna at all. I don't think Radha will like that a lot. So again, we have to be careful to speak about the things in a sensitive way, right? So at the end of the day, we are all serving one same department. It's not like even the so-called opposition party, the Bipaksha Gopis like Chandravali or others that sometimes are depicted like the enemies of Radha, they are not enemies, they are not opposed, they love each other, but they serve in different moods, as we were saying before. They present a particular emotional bouquet that creates the exact contrast and friction and particular churning that is required for love to reach a new height. So nobody's against someone else in the realm of love. It's all a realm of cooperation. And that's an important word that I remember once I heard from a sadhu. He said, the first step into the world of love is learning to cooperate with one another. Cooperation is the beginning of love. Because you look at that world of love and everyone is cooperating, even those who seem to be opposed to one another. That's a form of cooperation, even. But in this world, sometimes it looks like we're loving one another, and that's a mask to hide the non-cooperation. So if we are really into love, okay, that has to be shown first in how we cooperate, how we learn to cooperate with one another, coexist, relate, work together for a common cause. That's what's happening in the realm of love, ultimately. Yeah. I don't know if that helped at all.
That helped a great deal. Thank you so much, Maharaj. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Okay, let's go to the next question. We'll skip this breakthrough room so we have time to hopefully to address remaining question from Kanupriya and then Katie. Maybe we'll transgress a few minutes of the normal time, if you allow me. Let's see. So Kanupriya, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Yes. I mean, Katie was first, actually, but I
Okay.
don't see her anymore.
We'll go to both. And now she's, yeah, I'm seeing her.
Okay.
We'll go to both, no problem.
Okay. Okay, it's also a question regarding or in connection with Radharani. I just read the chapter of your book about Radharani, and I felt like often before some resistance in my heart to really open my heart to Radharani, to this form of love and so on. And I was thinking about it, why it is like this, and I think it's one reason could be that I never experienced love from a female person, of course not in such a degree, but maybe, also, how to say, I mean, all glories to my mother, she did her best and so on, but also, maybe it was never love, and so it's difficult. I think it's difficult for me to really open up to such a divine form of female love, because I never experienced it in my material life. So, yeah, maybe you can say something about this. Can we just transcend our experiences? How can we connect nevertheless? How can we open our heart to the spiritual love and so on?
Yeah, thank you. Of course, we don't have all the time to enter into the details, but it's an important question. We were talking about that in Switzerland, right? About how sometimes we can have experiences in bhakti that are, how to say that, pierce through certain trauma that we have acquired, so to say, or certain wounds that sometimes get in the way of having certain experiences, but sometimes we can have also genuine experiences that really pierce through all that and give us an experience of that beyond our own wounds. Of course, it doesn't mean that after having the experience, I transcended the wounds. Maybe because of having that experience, then I will go back to my wounds and work on them. Knowing that there is something more powerful than my wounds and a reality that is awaiting me beyond my wounds. It's not like, oh, I have this flash ecstatic experience, so I don't need to tend my wounds anymore and to solve that stuff. No, probably that will send you back there from a more empowered place. So if some of us have not have any, we will say, genuine experience of female, motherly, sisterly love, unconditional love coming from a female figure in our lives, or of course you can apply the same to a male figure, depending other each one their own lacking, so to say. We are all coming with some lacking in that regard in one degree or another. We don't want also to say black and white, there has been nothing of that in one way or another, but yeah, some lacking for sure. Again, though we may appreciate, especially coming from our parents, because they are our first, how to say, embodiments of everything and anything for us as a point of reference, whether it is love or anything, the main representatives of authority of God. For us, they're our gods to begin with. So very naturally, if I receive certain experience from my parents, somehow I end up projecting that to God, unconsciously many times, because parents were our first gods, our first authority figures. Well, we could not think about the notion of God, but we could think about mom and dad. But if mom and dad were absent, emotionally absent, or whatever, then when the idea of God pops in and somehow I introduce it, very inadvertently, I may transmute those same ideas to, okay, the new bigger authority figure, maybe augment all that stuff in connection to God, because God is the ultimate authority figure. So if my mom was emotionally unavailable, so then the Supreme Mother, Sri Radha, how much more emotionally unavailable she must be. I mean, I'm not saying that's the case, but we may unconsciously end up there. And of course, that's not the idea. So that's why we need to gain awareness of our inner processes and, okay, how, as you were saying, no? Okay, I'm feeling that I'm not connecting there. There may be some fear. Why? And one starts to like to put the dots together, and in that connection, there may be some healing to be done in connection to our female relationships, so to say, source female relationships, and sometimes it takes time, no, healing that, acknowledging, integrating that, grieving that. Again, there's lots of grief work in the context of healing. And that can allow us to open ourselves and trust the possibility of having understood that particular source relationship and have not only grieved that, but also appreciated that and being grateful for that. And having learned to see some form of love coming through that with the toolkit that that person had at the time, we can appreciate that and open from a positive place of gratitude to that. Then we can trust and move forward to trust that, okay, it is possible that a healthier and bigger and deeper expression of female love is there. And it can be in relationship to Radha, or it can be in relationship to other entities in female form, so to say, right? Because again, it's sometimes we need the representation of those divine principles, as we'll say, okay, a guru is the representative of Krishna in our lives. Sometimes we may not have a clear idea of what Krishna feels like, and sometimes you meet the sadhu who moves your heart, he or she, in a way that, oh, that's kind of a trailer of what's a connection to the divine. So sometimes you can have a connection to the love that comes from the feminine loves, if you want to use that expression. So some people who are not only female body, but it can be a male body who has their his feminine side properly integrated also. You follow my point? There are so many ways in which, but I will agree that all of us, not only you, Kanupriya, but all of us need to make peace with both sides of the equation, both polarities, female and male. So whether we are carrying some unhealed wounds, unredeemed wounds, uncried wounds that need to be tended to, grieved over, or whatever, in order we can be integrated human beings and be nourished by what we are receiving, both from female and male people or sides of people, and ultimately by the god and the goddess. No? Because I've seen that in both sides, and people being drawn to Radha, but escaping from the toxic male idea they have about Krishna. That's interesting, right? And for some people, that's unthinkable, but the opposite may be happening, or something in between, or hopefully nothing of that. But sometimes something is going on. So it's good. It's part of the anartha nivritti, right? It's part of the getting rid of false beliefs, like this dismantling and deconstructing toxic ideas. Or wounds that need to be healed, and they will become a proper perspective. So, and of course, there's different ways. Of course, there are many beautiful prayers to Sri Radha and Radha Rasa Sudhanidhi and other, especially in that book, that speak about her as a mother, as a friend, as a sister, and all these different female dispositions from a very warm and merciful place. For some people, that may be helpful to address her from that place of appreciation of all those qualities that we may have not have much of an experience. That's something, but I will make my case for trying to open ourselves to the female principle embodied in other people in our lives. You know? I mean, in the relationships that come to my life, which somehow represent the principle of Radha. The healthy integration of the feminine, healthy expression of the feminine, whether it's again female-bodied, male-bodied, but there is a healthy expression of the feminine side there. Okay. How can I give gradually, but how can I open myself to that experience, to that love? Because in one sense, of course, I totally understand you say Kanupriya, because I didn't have that experience, I may have difficulty in trusting that. But one could also say, exactly because one may lack that experience, all the more you have the best reasons to trust that, because one is in need of that. So one could use the same argument to try to emphasize, not like it imposing anything, but just to realize, oh, because I lack that experience, I need that experience. I mean, acknowledging the lack is a form of acknowledging the need of that which I lack. So, and that hopefully is a form of open, just acknowledging that is a is an opening, gradual opening to that experience. So Now we are all in that same journey one way or another. So again, you are not alone in difficulties that may arise in addressing whether it's male or female conceptions of the divine, which actual and things that get in the way of that, not because there is something wrong with Radha and Krishna, but there's unintegrated layers of our own experiences. What with love coming from male and female figures, especially our primary caretakers. So I hope that helps. I don't know. You tell me.
Wow, this was really deep. Yes, it helps a lot. I really feel, wow, this is working on my heart. Thank you.
Well, okay. If the answer starts with wow, I can trust something's going on. Yeah, sometimes we need time, right? Need time to sink in and allow these ideas to take some particular shape on how is that will be expressed in my particular life, in with my relationship with the people that are who surround me in my life. And yeah, but I will say we are sincere and honest. The Sweet Absolute will be made it very clear that we have many windows of opportunity for us to explore that thing we need to explore, right? Different people, different friendships, potential embodiments of female love in our lives. So, yeah. Okay. Let's go for 5 minutes to the breakthrough rooms to discuss a little bit more about this particular aspect of female love. Only 5 minutes this time, and we go back to honor Katie's question. Then one more breakthrough room. There you are. Welcome back. Sorry for making it so short. That is also its own kind of flavor. So we'll conclude today's meeting inviting Katie. She had a question or something, request, something to share today. Let's see where her offering takes us to conclude our gathering. Welcome, Katie.
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj.
You
Nice
are
to see
Mr. Beautiful.
everyone.
Please.
Michael. I was reading your latest book last night and got to the part on page 27 where it's talking about Radha and Krishna and how they're two, how they're one soul and two assuming two bodies. And you said they appear as two for the sake of relishing lila or divine play. And the first thing that popped into my mind was, well, what are the rest of us here for then? And of course, I can say so many things that I've heard over the years. But a lot of those things don't really resonate or like land with me right now. We're created, or we're here to support Radha and Krishna's divine pastimes and to serve them and to enhance their pleasure. And there's this part of me that's honestly kind of irked by that. We're just here for them. Like, I want to enjoy too. I mean, our entire conversation today has been about love and serving love, responding to the invitation of love that's there at every moment. And I really appreciate being reminded about that. And I understand, I think, enough on an intellectual level that that's who we are and it's where we come from, and it's the whole purpose of existence is to love, to love everyone. Sometimes that's easy, sometimes that's hard, at least in the state that we're in right now. And that's the only fulfilling thing, that's the only thing that's ever going to fill our hearts and bring joy and happiness and purpose is love and love in action. So I don't know, Maharaj, I've just been rambling, but I just wanted to ask you to speak a few words about what are the rest of us here for? Like, Radha and Krishna are engaging in their divine lila, and is our purpose really to serve that them? And is that really where we feel fulfilled and
You just gave the answer in part in the question because you say, but in love, that's where we find complete fulfillment. So it's not that there is no fulfillment. It's not like, okay, we are to serve Radha and Krishna, but what about us? Who will fulfill me? Now everyone becomes fulfilled in that equation. It's not like there is some lacking and it all goes to Radha and Krishna. And there are two selfish guys that pick the whole thing and run away, and everyone else ends up being empty-handed. And hey, we gave all our life to this divine couple, and they have like ransacked our, and I'm at the loss now. I'm bankrupt. That's not how it works. Remember, love is fully reciprocal, so it's always reciprocal. It's always reciprocal, and don't lose sight that Radha and Krishna are already loving us before we even start to do so. So it's not so much like the whole thing is me to love them. Well, they're already loving us, and they're not complaining about that. No, they're not like, hey guys, we're loving you from time without beginning, and you still are complaining over there about loving me in return. They're not even thinking about that. They just love us as much as they can love us without us reciprocating them. They are loving us as much as they can without our participation in it, so to say. So again, we need to remind ourselves of those things, because when we think, so the whole thing is me to please them, and it no, that's not the whole thing. We are missing a lot of things if we just think like that. It's not like, oh, I have to kickstart the whole thing and they are just receiving my dedication. No, they are already loving us from the time when we say God does not exist even. So that's already happening from their part. So our loving them ideally should be in response to their love for us, which is already happening. So it's a fair, I would say it's a fair game in one, if you want to use that term. It's not like they're requesting from us something that they are not already giving. They're already giving love, unconditional acceptance, affection. Whether we are taking the gift or not, that's another thing. That's up to us, because love is voluntary. And again, as I that this is more something that I'm exploring in what will be the fourth book, which is, okay, we are loved by God, then that sets the ideal situation for us to return the embrace, to love them back for the right reasons, acknowledging how they are loving us already. But when we love them back, it's not that that's game over. Oh, we love them back and they say, okay, finally, it was time, right? Thank you for your love back. And end of the transaction here. No, that's just the warming up. Again, that was kind of the preliminary warming up. The unconditional love, our returned embrace. Now they say, okay, now things are getting real now. Now we're entering the real thing. N then now Radha and Krishna will return the embrace after we have returned embrace. And then the whole thing starts like an ever expanding spiral of back reciprocation, which has no end. But there are so many statements in the scripture that depict how, as we have been quoting many times, like when we dare to return the embrace, Krishna feels eternally indebted. Again, it's not like it's all about me. Thank you for loving me. I'm taking your love and running away. He feels like, I don't know how to pay back. I will try my best, but even that small, sincere gesture you offered that time, oh Draupadi, when you call me, that has created an ever-increasing debt that does not leave my heart, Krishna says. So this is the type of people we are dealing with, so to say. No. So I think we need to bring all these ingredients into the picture, so we are not left with a very how to say, very partial picture of why do I have to give myself to them? Why it's all about them? Who say it's all about them? They are not thinking it's all about them. They want us to be part of all that they are about. Radha and Krishna, again, as we quoted many times, Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will say, the search, the loving search for the lost servant. Krishna is engaged in a desperate search. It's an emergency, he will say. It's urgent. No? Radha and Krishna are looking us for us with a sense of urgency. Again, still we have the choice of doing our own thing separate and try to live an impossible life, because by design, we are not separate beings. They allowed us to try that possibility, to try to leave the illusion of being a separate center, but that's not possible, that's not necessary. Actually, the whole lesson of existence is try to learn that in loving, there is fulfillment. Of course, there is, on top of that, there is a new, another level of thirst, but their fulfillment is love. So it's not that by loving, by dedicating ourselves to the divine, I'm missing something. Actually, by not dedicating myself to the divine, I'm missing the only thing that I actually need. It may take us lifetimes to reach that conclusion. And it's okay. Krishna said you have eternity on your sides, but hopefully you reach that conclusion. We reach that conclusion. The actual thing that I'm missing is love. And love in the sense of not that I'm not receiving love from them, but giving myself in love. And when I give myself in love for the right reasons, I mean, again, probably if the idea of giving myself to Radha and Krishna in love doesn't make sense, it's probably because I'm thinking about the wrong reasons for why to give myself in love to them. And probably behind those wrong reasons are wrong reasons about how they feel for me before I even dare to give myself to them. I'm not saying you are thinking that, Katie. I'm just saying, speaking in general. And it happens to a lot of us. Again, it's part of the anarthanivritti, of the deconstructing of false values, of deconstructing of the wrong reasons to do the right thing, right? Because Krishna Bhakti is all about the right thing, and that's the right thing in the sense of the most beautiful ideal. But you can pursue the most beautiful idea for all the wrong reasons. Still filter with trauma and resolve stuff, fears, and heal wounds, who knows what. So for the sake of that beautiful ideal, we will take the time to deal with all that stuff. So we can approach Radha and Krishna for the right reasons. They don't want anything apart from that. They don't want us to approach them with a tortured mind, with pressure and intimidation for the sake of fitting in. They don't want that. They're not that cruel. I mean, they want to relate to us. They already are loving us unconditionally, but they are expecting that we return the embrace for the right reasons. If not, they will say, no, don't do that. That's harmful to you. Please don't be so cruel to yourself. Don't love us for the wrong reasons. That's toxic. Don't do that. But when we get a glimpse of the right reasons, they make so much sense that that becomes irresistible, basically. When we get the proper perspective, when we get the proper reality, how Radha Krishna really feel for us, and what happens when we return the embrace, and how do they reciprocate? The real perspective of that is so charming, so irresistibly attractive that there's nothing else to do, basically, but to pursue that ideal through everything we do on a daily basis. So if that's not happening, which can happen, it's fine. Then we don't need to judge Radha and Krishna or the ideal, but we should be careful enough to pay attention to what may be getting in the way of this. Some misunderstanding, some unresolved stuff. And even if someone says, no, let's be sincere about this, I just want to enjoy in a selfish way as much as I can, and I don't want to even think about loving Radha and Krishna. Okay, thanks for the sincerity. Good luck with the attempt. Shoot as best as you can. You will never get fulfillment in that. Sorry to ruin the part in advance, because there is no register in history of human life that someone has tried that and they really get there. So, but that's the interesting symptom of illusion, that nobody has done it, but somehow I feel I can do it. I can be the exception to the whole history of humankind. That's one of the symptoms of being in illusion, basically. But we can try. Sometimes we need to try. We need to try hard, hit our head on the wall. We learn sometimes the hard way. It's fine. Krishna allows that from time immemorial, as much as he suffers witnessing us in that direction. But I will say that many times it's not so much about that. It's not so much about I want to selfishly enjoy in the wildest way, but it's just about we don't have the a charming enough proposal, so to say, a coherent enough idea of how to relate to God. So because we don't have something that is irresistibly attractive, we end up turning out to any other option available in the market, so to say. But it's just because we didn't get the proper definition, because when we get in touch with that and if we are open and sincere, we will feel attracted. Bhajaniya guna vishishta Srila Siddhar Maharaj said, the nature of Krishna is that when you enter in contact with his qualities, you become irresistibly drawn to dedicate yourself in that direction. It's too much. If that's not happening, which is okay, then it's not Krishna's fault. It's just a question of, it's nobody's fault. Let's not play the blame game. It's just what's getting in the way of me getting irresistibly attracted. It's like, again, two magnets attracted, but sometimes the magnet is, how do you say what covers a magnet? Like, I don't know the word in English, oxide or something that is covering them, and it won't be attract, there won't be a magnetic attraction between the two. So the potential is there, but you need to leave rust. Yeah, that's the word. You need to get rid of that rust. Chetodarpanamardhanam. That's what we are doing. We are practicing cleaning the heart for the sake of gaining a more and more powerful fascination and attraction to a reality that we know is attractive by nature. But yeah, while we are dealing with all that and with all the messiness in between, let's be also compassionate and generous and patient with ourselves also. And let's not drown in a pool of desperation and self-chastisement and toxic guilt and shame, because that gets us nowhere. So let's get the facts right, what's going on and why we may not be feeling what we naturally could feel, and let's work on that, but not bringing into the picture unnecessary baggage apart from the one we are still carrying, right? So those are some thoughts. I don't know if they touch any relevant chord.
Yes, thank you so much, Maharaj.
Oh, thank
Lots to
you.
ponder.
Thank you for your sincerity and courage in bringing your journey and sharing your journey with us. Okay, somehow it was a thematic meeting today, somehow revolving around the notion of love and Sri Radha. So beautiful warming up for those of us outside of New Zealand, for whom Radhastama will be tomorrow, and for those of those who are in New Zealand, for whom Radhastama is today. And again, let's make this celebration not only a one-day celebration, but an ongoing festival. And let's share for a few 5 more minutes, breakthrough rooms. Be generous with one another, especially those in India, like Anuttam Chitra, who are falling asleep. It's too late there, I know. 5 more minutes, Anuttam Chitra. Oh, be generous with us, share your presence, and see you in 5 minutes for one final goodbye. Okay, welcome back to you all. Hoping you had a blessed time together as well. And we are concluding our meeting for today. Wishing you a blessed celebration of Sri Radhastami later today, tomorrow, depending where you are. And looking forward to our next meeting, next Saturday from still from Switzerland. So looking forward to see you there. Deep gratitude for your presence, the gift of your art, Western explorations. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Samavida Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol, Vancha Kalpataru Vischa Kripa Sindhu Vyai Vacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.